Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, February 22nd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD approves new calendar. Students to again have two intercession weeks for 2022-23. By Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD's 2022-23 calendar will include two full weeks of intercession. The MISD board unanimously approved the calendar, which included the most recent recommendations from the District Educational Improvement Committee, DEIC, and then modifications approved by the board Monday during its monthly meeting. Those modifications keep school starting in August, but end the school year prior to Memorial Day in 2023. Two factors that Midland ISD leadership said was important based on the community feedback. The biggest change in the calendar from the 2021-22 version is that Thanksgiving week will now be 3 days, not five. That change was one of five modifications that helped the district's executive committee move the last day from a DEIC-recommended June 2nd to May 26th. Other changes included changing MLK Day from a holiday to one of two bad weather days. April 7th is the other. The committee also made August 6th a teacher planning day and September 30th into a half day for students. It was previously a teacher planning day. Important dates on the approved calendar include July 27th, the first day for new teacher training, August 8th, the start of the fall semester, October 31st to November 4th, the first intercession week, November 23rd to 25th, Thanksgiving break, December 21st to January 2nd, Christmas break, January 3rd, a teacher planning day, January 4th, the first day of the spring semester, February 13th to 17th, the second intercession week, March 13th to 17th, spring break, May 26th, the last day of the spring semester. Board President Brian Murray praised the DEIC, a committee made up mostly of campus leaders and teachers, for presenting draft calendar number 3, which included weeks for intercession. At the January meeting of the MISD board, it became obvious there was the board's support to continue the intercession calendar, which is designed to provide help for students that have fallen behind. A particular comment made then, and echoed Monday, was there wasn't the data to know whether intercession had made an impact at Midland ISD. Murray added he believed that the district's new leadership was making strides when it came to academic improvement, specifically pointing to favorable mid-year results. The board felt we started this, Murray said. Let's see where we are going and make decisions based on the results. This article is entitled Council to Vote on Park Papers. Board expected to decide on construction documents for $7.884 million baseball park. By Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland has plans for a $7.884 million baseball park project at Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park in East Midland. At the Midland City Council's meeting today, city leaders will vote to enter into a professional services agreement with Luck Design of Austin to prepare Phase 1 construction documents for park project. The city showed plans for the four junior baseball fields, including parking and a restroom/concession building. The list of amenities provided also include four turf baseball fields with fencing and LED field lighting, on-site walkways and trails, 207 parking spaces, ball field scoreboards, and park entry marquee and kiosk signage. Completion of the Phase 1 construction plans would be by August 2022, city documents said. The plans would then be put out for bids, with construction starting in November 2022. The anticipated time of construction would be 12 months. Two multi-purpose turf fields at Reyes Mashburn Nelms Park are near completion, according to the city. The city showed that funding for the preparation of the construction documents in the amount of $295,750 is available in the Park Bond Projects Fund. Council to vote on $3.4 million project at Wellfield. The Midland City Council will vote to award a construction contract with a Midland company for pump station improvements at the Paul Davis well field. The city reports that the project includes replacing two non-functioning existing pumps and ancillary electrical work. The contract would be with the sole bidder, Edgardo Madrid and Associates. The total bid price is $3.406 million, which includes a 25% contingency, according to the city. Funds will be allocated from the Water and Sewer Operating Fund. The Paul Davis well field is the City of Midland's emergency water supply and is used as needed to supplement water flow and maintain regulatory requirements. This article is entitled, Last Year's Deep Freeze Highlighted Need for All of the Above Energy, by Mella McEwen. Amid all the confusion about the various causes of Texas's power grid nearly failing during Winter Storm Uri, one thing is clear. After an estimated 26 hours of legislative hearings, what I learned is it's a complicated mosaic of energy sources across the state, said State Representative Drew Darby, the Republican from San Angelo. That mosaic includes oil and natural gas and wind and solar, which plays a role in rural economies like the area he represents. What also became clear is that all of the above energy sources will be needed, especially as more and more people move in and the state economy continues to grow, raising energy demand. That was the consensus of Darby and others participating in a media call sponsored by the Advanced Power Alliance to highlight the need for more and more diverse energy in Texas. State Representative Donna Howard said it is a complex issue but an important one because Texans died in Uri. I always want to mention that because I know a lot is being done to ensure power, but a huge number of Texans died because of issues with the grid. The Democrat said she regrets the issue has become politicized, but the ultimate goal is to ensure Texans have energy that is reliable, affordable, and clean. Texans are supportive of a competitive market, she said, but they are also laser-focused on what's happening to ensure they can turn on the heat in the winter or the air conditioning in the summer. It is an everything and all of the above on energy, said Matt Gallagher, Chief Executive Officer of Green Lake Energy Ventures. Gallagher noted that the grid survived its recent test with Winter Storm Landon, showing that the grid is resilient. But it is also reliant on oil and gas for two-thirds of its fuel source, he pointed out. Last year, issues with oil and gas production, whether it was frozen equipment, frozen roads preventing crews from reaching equipment, or power outages that prevented natural gas from being processed or moved through pipelines to power generators, contributed to the problems. A close look has been taken at how to get better, Gallagher said, and the industry will continue to improve its operations. With natural gas 40% of the energy crude and gas power generators rely on, if we supply 40% of the energy, we need to be accountable, he said. Caitlin Smith, Senior Director for Regulatory Public Affairs and ESG at Juniper Power, said the recent winter storm showed that everyone, industry, legislators, regulators, power generators, and renewable energy, could work together to ensure the grid kept operating and make improvements. Like Darby and Gallagher, she said traditional oil and gas will be needed, but so will renewables like wind and solar and emerging technology like batteries. Embracing a diverse portfolio of energy sources is not only good for Texas in terms of reliability and cost, said Howard, but good for job creation. Darby concluded that not only is there a need to ensure that power can get to where it is needed, but there needs to be a framework to encourage developers to bring more power generation to Texas. This article is entitled Republicans 91% of In-Person Voters by Stuart Doreen. Nearly 4,000 Midland County residents have voted in person or mailed in a ballot for the March 1st primary elections, according to the Midland County Elections Office. The total number of in-person voters through Sunday was 3,696. Of that, more than 91%, 3,396, voted in the Republican primary. Another 278 votes had been mailed in. The most popular voting place for those casting a ballot in person was the Midland County Elections Office. More than 51% of all ballots cast through Sunday happened at the Elections Office, which is located inside the county annex on A Street. The Centennial Library and Fairmont Park Church were second and third, with 714 and 652 votes, respectively. Early voting continues today through Friday at the five voting centers, which also include Cogdill Learning Center and St. Paul United Methodist Church. In 2018, there were 7,590 votes counted during early voting and 14,731 overall. Primary elections. Election day, March 1st. Early voting. Elections Office, County Annex, 280 North A Street, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Friday. Centennial Library, Meeting Room 113, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Cogdill Learning Center, Classroom Number 4, 201 West Florida Street. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, Classroom Number 2, 3813 North Midland Drive, St. Paul United Methodist Church, Fellowship Hall, 4501 Thomason Drive, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Tuesday through Friday. This article is entitled Poll, Abbott Up 7 Points Over O'Rourke, by Robert T. Garrett, The Dallas Morning News. Austin. Governor Greg Abbott again holds a single-digit lead over Democrat Beto O'Rourke in the Texas governor's race, while scandal-plagued Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton probably is headed for a GOP runoff, according to a Dallas Morning News University of Texas at Tyler poll released Sunday. With a few breaks, though, such as a decision to stay home by GOP voters who say they probably will vote but aren't sure, Paxton might get close to escaping a runoff, the poll found. Although the state's main electric grid held up well during a recent ice storm, boosting Texans' confidence that their lights wouldn't go out as they did last year, Abbott actually lost momentum from his double-digit lead over O'Rourke in January, despite his heavy spending on ads boosting himself and slamming O'Rourke. Simultaneously, Abbott was taking hits from O'Rourke, the leading Democrat, and several Republican challengers running to the incumbent's right. Also complicating the picture, impressions of O'Rourke among all Texas voters, while still in net negative territory, improved slightly from last month to 40% favorable, 46% unfavorable. The poll, conducted February 8th to 15th, surveyed 1,188 adults who are registered voters and has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.1 percentage points. Three of the statewide races, Abbott and O'Rourke's election by their respective parties in the gubernatorial contest, and incumbent Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick's renomination by the Republican Party, are likely to be settled in those three men's favor on election night, said UT Tyler political scientist Mark Owens, the poll's director. In Texas primary, if you bag 50% of the votes cast plus one, you avoid a runoff. Along with Paxton's pursuit of the GOP's consent that he be its candidate yet again for the Attorney General post, two other statewide primaries seem headed to a runoff, Owens said. The Democratic primaries for Lieutenant Governor and Attorney General. In them, respectively, Mike Collier and Rochelle Garza have established leads, though May runoffs loom, the professor said. The outcome of a seventh statewide elective office primary that the News and UT Tyler have been tracking, the Republican contest for state agriculture commissioner remains unclear, the poll found. In that race, incumbent Sid Miller is backed by 32% of Republican primary voters, compared with 14% for State Representative James White of Hillister and 6% for Brenham farmer-rancher Cary Council. But 47% of the voters really don't know who they will vote for, even when we ask whom they lean towards, Owens said. The marquee race this year, the governor's race, has narrowed from January, when Abbott led O'Rourke in a hypothetical matchup by 11 percentage points, 47% to 36%. Abbott's lead over O'Rourke this month is 7 points, 45% to 38%. The race has been remarkably stable, Owens said. In the February poll and four previous polls dating back to last July, the incumbent governor's lead has ranged from 5 to 12%, with changes in each candidate's support from the previous poll within the survey's margin of error, he noted. Last month's poll can be best explained as a test of reputations, and this month, voters are making more direct comparisons, Owens said. When this happens, polls often tighten between the two candidates. Counting votes, teaching race. On issues, confidence in the electoral process in Texas is increasing, especially among Republican and Democratic voters, the poll found. 70% of all voters said they are somewhat or very confident the March 1st primary election will be conducted fairly and accurately, up from 65% in January. Just 63% of independents are confident, with 37% of them not confident, more than the 30% of Republicans who are skeptical and 23% of Democrats. While the GOP is pushing to expunge any teaching of critical race theory in classrooms, 59% of all Texas voters say they agree that K-12 teachers should be permitted to discuss how historical examples of discrimination in U.S. laws apply to racial inequalities today. The result in November was the same. 59% agreed with teaching past examples of discrimination. 27% of voters trust elected state leaders to review controversial books and decide if they should be culled from public school classrooms and libraries. In November, 28% did. Texans have more confidence in the judgment of local librarians and school district officials to decide on removal of any books, though not overwhelmingly. 45% have a fair amount or a great deal of trust in the local educators. 47% do not. Many Texas Republican voters, though, have picked up on the controversies in other states, such as Virginia, over what is taught about race and sexuality in public schools. Retired Flower Mound entrepreneur Maria Crahill, 59, is one. Though an independent, Crahill said she would support re-electing Abbott. I can at least count on him to continue down the same road and not take us off in some place that I don't think Texas needs to go, like critical race theory, she said. I don't think a teacher should be able to go off what is typically taught without us understanding what she or he is going to teach. On the books chosen or removed, Crehill said she wants neither state nor local officials making the calls. Should parents have a say in some of that, especially if it's different than what their family's values and morals have been over the last several generations? She asked. Yeah. Michael Jackson, 64, who lives in Houston's Third Ward, though, said he strongly objects to state GOP leaders' attempts to scare teachers away from discussing embarrassing topics such as the country's permitting slavery to flourish, and then, after its abolition, Jim Crow laws that required racial segregation. That makes no sense, said Jackson, a former high school history teacher who works for a chemical production company. U.S.-Mexico border, COVID-19. On Abbott and state GOP leaders' push to spend billions of dollars to make trespassing arrests of migrants and complete former President Donald Trump's wall at the Texas-Mexico border, there's been some erosion of support. Abbott continues to get higher marks for his handling of immigration at the nation's southern border, 50% approve, 46% disapprove of the Texas governor's performance, than President Joe Biden, 31%, 56%. But support for sending the Texas National Guard and state police to patrol the border slipped 3 percentage points from January to a narrow majority of 51%. While 53% of voters say the wall spending is wasteful or could be better spent. In January, 27% of independents thought the $20 million a mile cost was reasonable. This month, only 20% do. The cost is a little over the top, said retired Decatur Hospital Secretary Penny Green, a longtime independent, who said the Democratic Party is going so far left that she's having to exclusively vote Republican these days. Still, a border wall is necessary since there is no control of the border, said Green, 64. I live in the country. I have a fence to keep my cows and my animals in, but I also have a gate that I expect everyone to use when they come. I don't expect somebody to just drive on my property. Immigrants should come through the legal points of entry, respecting U.S. laws, she said. On COVID-19, perhaps because new infections from the Omicron variant have begun to decrease, the poll found a 5 percentage point reduction in the number of voters who wore a mask in the past 7 days. In January, 77% said they had. This month, just 72%. Age groups with the biggest decreases in mask wearing were 35 to 44-year-olds, 71%, down from 79% last month, and those 65 or older, 69%, down from 78%. On vaccines, the share of registered voters who say they've gotten the shots is 64%, same as in January. Also, 57% of Texas parents say their children as young as 5 years old already have been vaccinated against COVID-19, or they probably or definitely will receive the vaccine. That's slightly up from January's 55%, which was a significant decrease from November, when 63% of parents planned to vaccinate their kids. Among Latino parents, while 54% were willing to have children get the vaccine last month, 64% were willing this month, the poll found. Favorable Republican climate. Going into primaries in a midterm election year, the atmosphere remains favorable to Texas Republicans, the poll found. Only 39% of state voters approve of Biden's performance in his first year as president, with 57% disapproving. If the general election were today, 52% of all voters say they would vote for a Republican candidate for the Texas House, compared with 45% backing a Democratic candidate. For the Democrats, that's far worse than 2 years ago when they enjoyed a narrow 51-49% edge on the generic Texas House ballot question. But it's slightly better than their 10-point deficit of a month ago. 49% of voters say they're more likely to participate in the GOP primary, 8 percentage points more than are likely to pick up a Democratic ballot. Governor. Abbott's job rating has declined from his high point of 61% approval. 23% disapproved in April 2020, when during early months of the pandemic, voters rallied to his side. But his 50-46% net approval this month is better than his low point last September, when he was barely above water, 45-44%. A significant 49% of voters say the state's on the wrong track, compared with 50% who said it's heading in the right direction. Some younger independent voters, such as Dane Sorensen, feel as if Abbott's been in power forever. Sorensen, 34, of Garland, likened Abbott to U.S. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, first elected to the Senate in 1984. "Why are these people still around?" said Sorensen, a Dallas water treatment plant operator. "It's like, golly, we still got the same problems we had in 1984. You don't like anyone to stay in politics for too long. And Abbott has been there for I don't even know how long. Get fresh faces in there." Still, Sorensen said O'Rourke is too liberal, and in all likelihood, he'll reluctantly vote for Abbott. As for the February 3rd ice storm, Sorensen said that going into it, he had a fair amount of confidence the state's electrical grid was prepared to avoid blackouts in his community. "I was worried, but we made it through, it seems like," he said. The recent storm left 32% of voters more confident about the grid's stability and 34% less confident. 33% said the recent weather event didn't change their level of confidence. An exception was black voters, who by 44%-24% said this month's storm left them less confident the grid is fixed. That underscored a serious erosion of black approval of the job Abbott is doing as governor. Last July, 24% of black voters approved of Abbott's job performance, 53% disapproved, and 24% were noncommittal. This month, though, fewer black voters, 10%, have no opinion. The governor's underwater with that demographic by 20%-71%. Jackson, the Houston chemical plant employee who is black, said Abbott's spending on a border wall is wasteful. He's voting for O'Rourke. "He has a fresh energy for the political scene here in Texas," Jackson said of O'Rourke. From January to this month, Republican support for Abbott over O'Rourke, or someone else, declined slightly to 76% from 78%. Meanwhile, Latino voters, who last month split for Abbott, 40-39%, moved O'Rourke's way this month, backing him 45%-36%. In Abbott's GOP primary, he draws support from 60% of Republicans, compared with 7% for former state GOP Chairman Alan West and 6% for Parker County conservative activist Rick Perry. Former Dallas State Senator Don Huffins, Blaze TV host Chad Prather, and North Texas business owner Danny Harrison tie for fourth with 3% each. Two others had 1% apiece. Green, the co-owner of a 150-acre cattle farm in Wise County, said she's voting for Huffins. Green agrees 100% with his views, as she put it, to the UT Tyler Center for Opinion Research. In an interview with the news, she cited one Huffins stand, which she noticed in the Dallas real estate developer's TV ads and social media promotions. "He said he would do away with the property tax," she recounted. "People that own property are punished because they own property. I feel like we're having to pay taxes constantly." On the Democratic side, O'Rourke commands allegiance from 68% of primary voters, with former Austin Public Radio journalist Joy Diaz a distant second at 4%. None of the other six Democrats running exceeded 3%. Attorney General. In the GOP primary, Paxton leads with 39% to 25% for Land Commissioner George P. Bush, 13% for former Texas Supreme Court Justice Eva Guzman, and 7% for Tyler Congressman Louie Gohmert. Paxton, who gained 6 percentage points from his January showing, Bush, who also gained 6 points, and Guzman, also plus 6, all improved. Guzman lags, though, and Gohmert did not change. In recent days, Paxton has told conservative radio show hosts that he might win the nomination without a runoff. For that to happen, though, pollster Owen says every card would have to turn in his direction and the other candidates would have to stop campaigning. Pressed on whether they have decided or if there's a candidate they'll probably support, just 16% of GOP primary voters said they really didn't know who they will vote for in the attorney general race. Gains by Guzman and Bush since January make it unlikely Paxton can avoid the May runoff, Owen said. Bush is the likely second-place finisher. To clear 50%, Paxton would need to win 2 of 3 undecided voters who are certain or probably going to vote, the pollster explained. One path to clear 50% is a low turnout election, and only those who are certain to vote cast a ballot. Even then, Paxton would have to receive support from 2 of every 5 voters who are still undecided but are certain to vote. Also working against the notion Paxton can squeeze out a majority in the first round of voting is the fact he's under FBI investigation after 8 former top staffers accused him of abusing his office to help a wealthy campaign donor who was already in the FBI's crosshairs. Some fence-sitters may view Paxton negatively. However, voter awareness of Paxton's legal difficulties, which include a 6-year-old indictment for securities fraud, is not high, previous polls have suggested. On the Democratic side, between January and the start of early voting, Rochelle Garza, a former ACLU attorney from South Texas, broke away from a crowded field. This month, Garza leads with 22%, Joe Jaworski, a mediator and former Galveston mayor, has 13%. Mike Fields, a former Republican judge in Harris County, and Lee Merritt, a civil rights lawyer in North Texas, are tied for third with 9% each. Stephen T-Bone Rayner of Richardson draws 6%. 38% say they don't know for whom they'll vote. Lieutenant Governor Patrick, the former Houston conservative talk radio host, has the support of 54% of GOP voters for renomination to a third term. His closest competition is Daniel Miller, president of the Texas Nationalist Movement, who supports secession from the Union, with 4%. 31% say they don't know for whom they'll vote. Among Democrats seeking to become lieutenant governor, Houston businessman and accountant Mike Collier leads with 21%, followed by Carrollton State Representative Michelle Beckley, 18%, and State Democratic Party Vice Chairwoman Carla Braley, 15%. Though Collier jumped 8 percentage points from his January showing, Beckley and Braley have held steady, which makes this a close race headed for a runoff, Owen said. This is the state from the front page. This article is entitled Flight Attendant Unions Want to Extend Mask Mandate by Kyle Arnold, the Dallas Morning News. Flight attendants want the federal government to extend face mask requirements on commercial airplanes beyond next month's expiration date, even with pressure growing against mask mandates on planes, airports, and elsewhere. Unions for flight attendants at American Airlines, United Airlines, and several regional carriers say it's not the appropriate moment to drop mask rules, even though they are looking forward to a time when face coverings are no longer a requirement for air travel. While more of the world now has access to life-saving vaccines, we still have a significant portion of the population that are vulnerable, including our youngest passengers, said Paul Hartshorn, a spokesman for the Association of Professional Flight Attendants, which represents about 24,550 employees at Fort Worth-based American Airlines. The Transportation Security Administration mandate requiring masks to be worn in airplanes, on interstate bus travel, and in transportation terminals such as airports expires March 18th, about 14 months after the original mandate from the Biden administration went into effect. Many parts of the country are starting to drop mask requirements, including states such as Connecticut and New Jersey, along with many businesses that required face masks to be worn throughout much of the pandemic. TWU Local 556, which represents flight attendants at Dallas-based Southwest Airlines, did not respond to a request for comment. The White House hasn't indicated whether it will extend the airplane masking order beyond next month. Southwest Airlines has made masks optional at its headquarters campus at Dallas Love Field. But whether or not masks should be required in the air on commercial flights is still a contentious issue. Last week, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and Congresswoman Beth Van Doyen, Republican Texas, sued the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention over mask mandates on airplanes, saying the agency lacks authority to enforce the rule. The TSA has also issued a rule mandating masks in airports. While COVID-19 cases have come down from the Omicron variant surge that peaked in January, flight attendants and others argue that masks help protect vulnerable passengers. The conditions in aviation are the same, said Taylor Garland, a spokeswoman for the Association of Flight Attendants, CWA, which represents flight attendants at such airlines as United, Frontier, Spirit, and Alaska, as well as regional carriers Envoy, Mesa, Piedmont, and others. Our youngest passengers do not yet have access to the vaccine. Garland said masks help maintain passenger confidence in air travel. Despite a rapid return to air travel, passenger numbers are still below pre-pandemic levels, especially business and international travel. The airplane is a unique but controlled environment for everyone's safety, Garland said. The layered approach to safety and security includes masks. The fight to keep masks comes as flight attendants also look to crack down on unruly passengers with a no-fly list that could be shared across airlines for travelers who cause problems on board flights. Flight attendants continue to face physical and verbal abuse, and we cannot sit by and allow these offenders to commit these dangerous acts from airline to airline, said APFA President Julie Hedrick in a statement. This behavior must stop. Early last week, Texas's Ted Cruz was part of a group of eight Republican senators that wrote a letter to the Department of Justice asking to block airlines and the government from starting a no-fly list for passengers. The TSA was created in the wake of 9/11 to protect Americans from future horrific attacks, not to regulate human behavior on board flights, said the letter, which was also signed by Marco Rubio of Florida and Mike Lee of Utah, among others. This article is entitled Taste of Permian Basin Moved from Bush Center by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Permian Basin Restaurant Association, a chapter of the Texas Restaurant Association, has announced the rescheduling of the 37th annual Taste of the Permian Basin. The event has been moved to the Horseshoe Pavilion and is now scheduled to be held on April 21st due to the recent flooding and closure of the Bush Convention Center. The damage to the Bush Convention Center is devastating for both the facility as well as for the events it serves, said Jerry Morales, president of the PBRA. We will, however, overcome this adversity and continue our traditional showcasing of local restaurants via the Permian Basin's premier tasting event. The Taste of the Permian Basin is one of West Texas's longest-running tasting events and will feature culinary delights from dozens of local restaurants. To purchase tickets and table sponsorships, visit tastethebasin.com. For more information, call 432-563-5233 or email pbra.info@gmail.com. This article is entitled HEB Honors Teachers with New Ice Cream Flavor by Dana Burke, Houston Chronicle. Texas educators working tirelessly across the state now have a sweet new way to relax when they get home, or maybe even during school hours. HEB is celebrating teachers with a new Creamy Creations ice cream flavor, Education Heroes. The ice cream, which arrived in stores last week, is an icing-flavored ice cream with cake pieces and rainbow sprinkles, and is available in half-gallon and pint sizes. The new flavor commemorates 20 years of the retailer's HEB Excellence in Education Awards in cooperation with the Texas Association of School Administrators, which has awarded more than $13 million in funding to Texas public schools, school boards, early childhood facilities, teachers, and principals since 2002, according to a press release. HEB will award more than $430,000 to educators and facilities during its 20th anniversary celebration on April 30th in Austin. This article is entitled Positivity Rate Falls Below 10% for First Time Since July by Stuart Doreen. The number of COVID patients at Midland Memorial Hospital has dropped by more than 50% in a week. On Tuesday, Midland health officials reported 43 COVID patients. On Monday, that number was down to 21. Midland Health showed 11 of the 21 patients on Monday were active patients. The other 10 were convalescing, those recovering after being active patients. On January 28th, the number of patients was 95. On February 4th, it was 70. Midland Health reported the positivity rate at Midland Health testing centers fell to below 10% for the first time since July. The positivity rate, according to the Midland Health website, showed 8.4% of the 450 people tested were positive for COVID. Midland Health reported last week was the sixth straight week that the positivity rate has dropped. The 38 positive tests also were the fewest from Midland Health testing centers since early July. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Vitol CEO Sees Oil Above $100 for Prolonged Period, by Archie Hunter and Anna Edwards, Bloomberg. Oil prices could be set for a prolonged period above $100 a barrel over the next 6 to 9 months, with the world setting fresh demand records this year, said Vitol Group Chief Executive Officer Russell Hardy. Crude already surged to within a few dollars of that level earlier this month, as the recovery in fuel use from the pandemic started to run into supply constraints. In an interview in London with Bloomberg Television, the boss of the world's largest independent oil trader said the market will get tighter, with daily consumption set to rise well above pre-COVID levels by the end of 2022. The 100 million barrel number is probably going to be exceeded this year, Hardy said. Demand is going to surge in the second half if travel continues to return to normal. As some of the biggest players in oil market gather in London for International Energy Week, the first time the event has happened in person for 2 years, their industry is still grappling with the consequences of the initial pandemic price slump. Energy supplies are struggling to keep up with a robust economic recovery. Several OPEC Plus members, plagued by underinvestment and disruptions, aren't able to revive all of the output they shut down in 2020. Many companies, from U.S. shale drillers to global supermajors, are focused on giving cash to shareholders instead of growing production. The result is a surge in oil prices that's feeding an inflationary spike. The situation threatens to derail the global economic recovery and inflict a cost of living crisis on millions. Brent crude oil for May rose to $92.08 a barrel at 2:36 p.m. in London, reversing a slump from earlier in the day. "More crude is required," Hardy said. "With daily demand rising by the end of this year to 1 to 2 million barrels a day above end 2019 levels, the whole system is going to be fairly tight." The tightness of the market is demonstrated by a price structure in oil futures called backwardation, where prices for a near-term delivery rise above contracts for later months. This pattern is currently prevalent in crude, diesel, natural gas, and coal. The situation we have today, where all markets are very backward, tells you there's not much give in the system, Hardy said. Energy supplies are only arriving just in time at the moment, which is not a great place to be. Patchy recovery. The recovery in fuel demand is still uneven. In oil products, Vitol sees gasoline consumption in the U.S. down by around 400,000 barrels a day currently, compared with February 2019. "We still think it's being affected by work from home," Hardy said. "People are not driving to the station, they're not driving to work." High prices may also be encouraging drivers to use their cars less, he said. Instead, diesel-powered industrial transportation is fueling demand growth. But jet fuel consumption remains capped by a lack of long-haul flights. "Oil supply is growing, just not as fast as consumers need," Hardy said. U.S. shale is increasing, but not at the same level it did during the boom years. Capital constraints from drillers and a lack of crew are also holding back production, Hardy said. OPEC Plus is gradually boosting output, and a nuclear deal with the U.S. could allow Iran to pump an extra 1 million barrels a day. "But that supply is already factored in for the second half of the year," Hardy said. "Eventually, we're going to run out of spare capacity," he said. "That's what the market is trying to work out. How worried to be about that scenario?"
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date of note is Tuesday, February 22nd, 2022. Abbott invited to Nacero groundbreaking. Florida company signs on to provide wind solar power. Pinwell, with plans to bring in Governor Greg Abbott for the groundbreaking and other heady developments, the Nacero Corporation is advancing rapidly with its plan to build a first-of-its-kind $7 billion natural gas-to-gasoline plant in this oil-filled ghost town 15 miles west of Odessa alongside Interstate 20. The other new development in the ambitious all-green scenario is Nacero's inking of a contract with Next Era Energy Resources to supply the plant with electricity from Next Era's multitudinous wind and solar farms. Nacero Project Integration Director Wesley Burnett of Odessa said Monday that the groundbreaking will be scheduled to accommodate Governor Abbott's schedule if indeed he can do it. "We hope to break ground in the first quarter or in April," said Burnett, former Director of Economic Development for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. "We have extended an invitation to the governor, and we would love for him to be there. We're waiting for him to let us know if he can make it." Asked where the Nacero plant will get its contracted for 20 billion kilowatt hours of Next Era power over the 20 years beginning in 2025, Next Era spokeswoman Amanda Seck said, "We have more than 20 wind and solar assets operating in Texas and have been doing business here since 1999. We are the largest generator of renewable energy from the wind and sun, SEC said in an email from the company's Juno Beach, Florida headquarters. The companies have said in a joint news release that the Pinwheel plant will have the ability to supply gasoline for 4 million motorists in Texas and the Southwest. The wind power will complement Nacero's planned 200-megawatt on-site solar photovoltaic power plant and ensure that the facility is powered by 100% renewable electricity, they said. NextEra Senior Vice President of Development, Matt Handel, said his company applauds Nacero's commitment to sustainability through their innovative technology, and we are pleased to be able to support the company's renewable energy goals. This will also create significant economic stimulus for the local community, creating good jobs and additional tax revenue, Handel said. OHS student seeks to solve medical riddles. Although Rigoberto Mendoza has never been to Atlanta, he'll be heading there next fall with a full-ride scholarship to Emory University. Mendoza, an 18-year-old senior at Odessa High School, was matched to Emory through the Questbridge National College match. He found out about Questbridge through his friend Evan Haley, who was matched to Princeton University a couple of years ago. Although Mendoza said his English teacher, David Newman, pushed his students to apply to the program. The way Questbridge works is you rank schools, and the first school that wants you, you'll get matched with them, Mendoza said. That's how Emory became my match. Mendoza said he researched the colleges he listed, looked at the campus, the teacher-to-student ratio, the location, and student life. He wants to major in biology and go into medical school. He's leaning toward pathology and becoming a coroner. I chose the path for my career to be pathology, the study of diseases. And I would really like for people to know why their loved ones have passed, because pathology actually leads into autopsies. That's the route I'm planning to take right now, is doing autopsies, but I really need to know if I have the stomach for it, he added. That's the inspiration that got him into sciences, giving someone the answer they're searching for. At the same time, the world of biology is never ending. There's always something to research or acquire, he said. Emory, a private university, has about 7,000 undergraduate students, he said. Since he was born and raised in Odessa, Mendoza acknowledges that going to Atlanta will be a culture shock. One thing I would say is it's kind of scary, because if you match to a university, you're legally bound to the university. So if you get matched, you have to go there. That's why you have flexibility in which school you rank in that order. I'm personally happy with my match. Emory has one of the best medical programs. That's what I'm planning on going into, Mendoza said. He's not sure what type of doctor he wants to be right now, but he's thinking of becoming a pathologist. Mendoza said his father was extremely happy about the scholarship he got, but his mother had mixed feelings at first because he will be moving so far from Odessa. But she's also very happy for me, Mendoza said. He has two older sisters and one younger sister. He observed that people could go a long way if they applied themselves academically. Biology and math are his favorite subjects. My motivation, it's kind of difficult to pinpoint, and I don't want to get too personal, but my parents' divorce is actually what motivated me to get involved in school. I use school as a safe haven, and as soon as I saw that people can actually go far if they apply themselves into academics, that's been my motivation ever since to get out of here and actually bloom in another city or another culture, he said. For other students who want to attend a top university, Mendoza said, start researching one that you can see yourself at and see if it's a good fit and what kind of good support system to direct you. Mr. Newman was my teacher that guided me and proofread in my essays. Really, it was like a blessing to have him at my side through the Questbridge application and also in our area. I really recommend to keep pushing the Quest Bridge program because we don't have that many applicants here, and it's a really amazing opportunity for the student body. Mendoza said, I really suggest for the schools here at ECISD to push this program. Don't get me wrong, it's a highly selective and difficult application process, but it's achievable, he added. He added that he presented that message to juniors the week of February 14th. You have to come from a low-income family, write essays and short answer responses, get recommendations from teachers, and upload all your financial aid. I think it helped coming from a student instead of a teacher pushing it to them, so I got with my English teacher, Mr. Newman, and he told me that it would be good if the students heard it from me, since I had just recently gone through the process and how it's impacted me, Mendoza said. OHS Principal Mauricio Marquez said he is extremely proud of Mendoza's achievements and is excited that he has been selected as a Quest Bridge recipient. Mendoza also was in the International Baccalaureate program and plays tennis. He was in orchestra but stopped this year. What separates Rigo from other students is his determination and perseverance to his academic studies. Not only is he enrolled in our most rigorous and advanced classes, but he is also involved in tennis, along with other organizations on campus, Marquez said. Rigo is a perfect example that your circumstances don't define who you are or what you will become one day. Your decisions and choices will determine that. And for him, his decision to challenge himself academically has certainly paid off. I wish him the best in all of his future endeavors and look forward to his many accomplishments.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.